Coming up on Digital Music Trends 177, recorded on the 2nd of April 2014, Bandpage raises a new round of funding, Spotify releases a major redesign of its apps, Ardio is the first on-demand service on the Chromecast, Amazon launches its Fire TV box, Last.fm axes its radio service, The Filter comes back to the music data space, the latest on a music QBED, and the future of the Topspin platform. Hello everyone and welcome to Digital Music Trends. I'm Andrea Leonelli and this is a weekly show where we talk about and try to make sense of the latest news in the digital music industry. And DMT is available as an audio and video show on a variety of channels, including the iTunes Store, most podcatching apps, including Downcast, YouTube, SoundCloud, Mixcloud, and many, many more. And to get in touch with the show, you can tweet us on @DigiMusicTrends or email contact@DigitalMusicTrends.com. I produced a ton of videos at South by Southwest in March, so if you want to go and check them out, you can head on to the site, look at events, and look at South by Southwest. And also, there should be a podcast feed that goes live on iTunes very, very soon. Hopefully, it will be approved this week or at the latest early next week. And this week, it's a real pleasure to welcome three great guests. At the beginning of the show, actually, at least. So, starting with Brian Felsen, a former president of CD Baby and Book Baby. So, hi, Brian. Thanks for joining me. It's a pleasure to have you. How's it going?
Hey, it's going great. Pleasure to be here.
And also we have Jay Sider from Bandpage, so CEO of Bandpage. So hi, Jay, how's it going?
Very good. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. And we also have Jay Herskowitz, who has been on the show before. It's a real pleasure to have you back, Jay. And he's a music tech consultant and developer who works on a bunch of projects, including Project Tomahawk out of New York City. So hi, Jay, and thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me back.
And so this week, we're going to start by talking about Bandpage. So Jay, that's the reason why you're on this week, and it's great to have you. Thanks so much for joining us. So Bandpage had a big announcement this week, which was a new round of funding, your C round, essentially. So tell us all about it. So how did it all come together, and what does it mean for the company?
Yeah, so yeah, this week we announced our Series C round, which was $9.25 million from some great investors, GGV and MDV. So we're, you know, going to use the money to continue to grow the company. Our goal, you know, in this company is to help musicians generate more revenue and grow their fan base. And we do that with, you know, just in a simple way, which is helping musicians reach their fans on all of the different platforms. And so we're very focused on, you know, anytime a musician builds a profile on Bandpage and puts up their shows and photos and videos in their store, that we display that content and commerce across the platforms that we power. So the round is to continue to grow the platform partners and provide value back to musicians.
Absolutely, and this kind of consolidates a comeback of Bandpage that has been ongoing really for the last sort of 18 months or so. But I wrote a piece actually that was, you know, talking about how when Facebook changed its timeline, you know, it would have been hard to bet on Bandpage being able to continue as a business. But you've done an amazing work on the back end and diversifying the technology, and that really has allowed you to thrive in a different environment.
Yeah, thanks for that. I mean, we worked really hard. You know, in the early days when we started on Facebook, we grew really, really rapidly and had quite a large user base at that point. So we looked at, cool, you know, musicians reach their fans on Facebook, but they also, you know, now just that over the past couple of years, the streaming companies and entertainment platforms have really gained a lot of traction, and actually, you know, can continue to have just an incredible amount of traction and traffic and engagement on these other services. And so, over the last, like you said, 18 months, we've now done deals and are powering Xbox Music and Vivo, Rhapsody, Clear Channel, Google, you know, and the list goes on.
Yeah.
One of the coolest deals that just came out was with LyricFind, which is the largest lyric site in the lyrics distributor in the world. They have over 5 billion lyric displays a year, where before, when a fan was looking up lyrics, you know, it was you'd only see ads on the right hand side. But now, right, when you look up lyrics, you can see the artist tour dates and store next to it, again giving more opportunities for fans to buy musicians, store items as well as get more fans going to their shows. So,
sure.
Yeah, we've been working very hard over the last 18 months to build that out, and got some more exciting announcements coming up soon.
That's great. And so just to bring the other guys in, so Jay, we don't often have the subject of the story in the room with us when we talk about these things, but you know, what are your thoughts on Bandpage over the last sort of year or so, and the progress they've done?
I love the approach. I'm a huge, vocal kind of proponent or at least talking head about the idea that I think fragmentation in the streaming services and the streaming market is going to continue to propagate. And I think the ability to be able to provide services across multiple streaming providers is an important and kind of growing piece of the puzzle. So I'm a big fan of that. I think fragmentation in streaming services is only going to continue to get worse or get better depending on how you look at it. And so being able to provide some sort of way for bands to get closer to the fans across all the various touch points that people are interacting with them, I think is great. So I'm a fan.
Yeah, and Brian, on your front, of course, you worked for many years at CD Baby, and so a lot of connections there with young fans, young artists that may well want to get their information on as many platforms as possible, right?
Yes, and I agree. I think that fragmentation will happen over the near term, and I think that that Bandpage is very, very well positioned to be able to provide a solution to get everybody's information everywhere.
Yeah, sure, exactly. And it's been a long time, Jay, since we met at Media. Was that 2010 or 2011?
I think that's 2011.
2011,
if I remember
right?
Correctly.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff has happened since then, and it's great to see you guys also being endorsed by Brian Message. That's pretty great quote on the press release.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Not a bad endorsement, really.
Radiohead is I think my all time favorite band, and so that was it's been great to get to know Brian and the MMF. Have just incredible musicians see the value in what we're building. At the end of the day, that's why I started the company. I'm a musician myself and managed bands and venues for a long time, and so my hope and dream was just to provide value to musicians around the world, and so I'm glad to see that they believe in it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And Jay, thanks so much for your time. It was a real pleasure having you on the show, and hopefully we'll have you on again very soon.
Okay.
Thanks
you guys
so much.
Take care.
Cheers.
Yep, thank you.
Good seeing you.
Awesome. Perfect. And we have transitioned without difficulties, and we continue. Look at that. That's fancy.
Very slick. That was very slick.
That's fancy stuff. And so after talking about Bandpage, which was a great story, again, seeing how the company has really managed. You don't see many startups that manage to pivot like that and really make it work in this way. So that's fantastic. And I wanted to talk about Spotify. So Spotify, there was a big story today that came out because they released finally, yay! It's like a fanfare. They released their biggest redesign to date. Although they released it without much of a fanfare, actually, which is interesting. They just posted a video on their YouTube channel showcasing the new design, and it's rolled out to iOS already, but it's still rolling out slowly to desktop clients, I think, because my clients have restarted it a bunch of times today, but I haven't managed to get the update to come through. So the update, which favors a dark background after a bunch of consumer research that they've done at the company, of course, is dark to make the artwork pop. At least that's what the company said. It's very sleek with new fonts and new feel to the app, and it also brings a couple of new features. One is a collection feature, which aims to make it easier for users to navigate through the track that they have saved on their devices. So hopefully that will get rid of the scrolling syndrome through playlists on Spotify. And the other is that they actually got rid of the star button, which I personally quite liked, but they want to push people towards adding tracks to playlists outright and doing a bit more work on the curation front. So I wonder how that's going to play out. But I want to hear your opinions. I actually haven't managed to find this collection feature yet. I'm wondering whether it's a client-only, a desktop client-only feature, or whether, I don't know why it's not appearing on my phone. Jay, what are your thoughts on the redesigns, and have you managed to try it out yet?
Yeah, well, I have not managed to try it out yet, although I'm very interested to. I'm on Android, and
right.
So there was no announcement of Android. I, like you, have tried to refresh my desktop client a couple times to try to see it, but have not been pushed the update. The interesting thing, and I did talk a little bit this morning about I thought it was an interesting choice to remove the star button, although it seems like they're A/B testing it, because I've gotten some reports from folks that have, you know, still have, you know, star track, and others that have a save button in its place. So obviously they're doing a little research there to figure out kind of how people behave. So I'm interested in seeing it. It's funny, you know, we are the Tomahawk team is working on an Android app now, and it's in beta, and we actually started with really dark, and we're moving towards a lighter gray. So it's right. certainly some preference there in terms of legibility and readability and things like that. But the idea of adding a collection, I think, is a move in the right direction. I think people are starting to get their heads around, like, everything is not a playlist. There was behavior that a lot of folks like myself, maybe the older folks, liked to collect, liked to have things in their collection. Like, to me, that was a notice to myself, like, yeah, I know that. I've listened to that. I liked it enough that I dragged it into a collection. So I think overall, some good positive moves. I look forward to seeing it. You know, they're calling this their 1.0 release, and I certainly think that that is not coincidental given all the increasing movement towards IPO, or at least as all rumors indicate, IPO. So it certainly seems like they're getting all their ducks in a row. So congrats to them on that.
Yeah. Brian, do you think that they were feeling a little bit of a hot under the collar with the release of Beats Music, for example?
You know, I'm not sure that they're that... it's hard to tell whether a company that size is really that concerned over Beats, or whether all the noise about Beats is just based on the reputation of the people involved and on you know, just what we hear inside the Beltway and in the digital blogosphere. But I've been a loyal RDO user for years. I was blown away by what RDO had released a couple years ago at South by Southwest. I had favored their app, but Spotify has shown, just with their scale and development, such an ability to roll out new features, from artist tour dates and faster search and all of these, at curation and their international expansion, and now this with this attractive new redesign. They're really, really tough company, which is why I think that over the near term, we will see fragmentation, will continue to, but I do think it will settle out after a couple of years.
Yeah. And Brian, actually, you talked about RDO. That's a really interesting point, because a lot of the articles that came out today commenting on this new release, we're talking about the fact that it looks like they pinched a lot of features that, you know, and a lot of design features that were on both Beats and RDO in order to come up with this release, which of course is something that all companies do when there is a better product out there. They, you know, like Apple does it all the time, for example. So in that context, do you think that it's going to make it harder for guys like RDO to differentiate themselves in the marketplace, considering that so far they've really been pushing this different approach, and the fact that you had collections and the fact that you had your own music on there?
I think RDO was already having enough trouble. I don't think that their design was a unique selling proposition. I got to see it just from having been at South By and having distributed all of our titles there. So I think that their problems are ones of marketing and scale and funding and all kinds of other things. I don't think that this is going to be any particular thing that hurts them. I think it's more of a validation that they have innovated and created something entirely beautiful.
Yeah,
I think RDO has done something amazing, and I wish them all the best.
Absolutely,
but Spotify is really just rolling along.
Yeah. Jay, for you, that does this make it harder for Beats to make the argument of look, we are the pretty app now?
You know, I think it's certainly going to become harder to differentiate as being, you know, the pretty one. Obviously, you know, Beats' whole marketing push and product perspective has been more around curation than it just being pretty. So I think they will certainly continue to bang that drum. I know that they're hiring. There's some more announcements today about, you know, some new marketing folks they hired, some kind of heavy hitters. So I mean, I think it's going to be more about it's really boiling down to experts – hiring experts to curate stuff for you. You just lean back and listen to it, versus kind of more the Spotify approach of we've got everything you want. You can find it. You can find other people. You can find other stuff. But it's certainly ramping up. The competition as a whole is ramping up. You know, we're still waiting for Amazon's shoe to drop. Still waiting for if Apple's shoe ever drops, which I don't think it necessarily will. But certainly, I mean. You know, the guys playing the game have all either grown to the size where they're extremely big, or the extremely big guys are getting ready to play the game. So that obviously makes it very difficult for RDO and some of the others. But, you know, it's probably the most interesting time in the space, I think, in the last, you know, 8 or 9 years in terms of what's going on. So it's fun to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. It's fun to watch, and we, of course, watch it here every week. And all change at Last FM this week as the company announced that it will close down its internet radio service as of the 28th of April. So it no longer made sense for the company to shoulder the costs attached to licensing or the radio product. And recently, the partnerships with YouTube, which is still in beta, I believe, has meant to provide access to its playlists features without having to pay for licensing. And also, the integration with Spotify to allow users to log in with their Spotify accounts on Last.fm to play full-length tracks had kind of given us a bit of a hint as to where the company was heading in this sense. The company will refocus on Scrobbling and the derived opportunities in recommendations. So Scrobbling, of course, is still the key reason why most people love and keep using Last.fm. So, you know, on that front, Jay, were you surprised by this announcement at all? And do you think Last.fm can refine its way through Scrobbling and recommendations?
I'm not surprised by it at all. I think it's been a long time coming, and you know, them looking to kind of extract themselves from licensing deals is, like I said, kind of been happening for a long time. You know, I think that certainly with the Echonist exiting to Spotify, I think there are a lot of people that are looking at the music data space, music recommendation space, as there's potentially a new opportunity to come in there, because obviously.
Yeah.
All of the, you know, numerous customers of Echonest are all looking for potential partners that don't power their biggest competitor.
Yeah.
You know, I think that there's huge value in collecting data. I think there's a massive amount of opportunity to provide a kind of social experience that bridges across multiple service providers and multiple subscription services.
Yeah.
You know, you will see you know, projects that I'm involved in do much more in that space. So you know, I think there's bigger opportunities now there than ever. I wouldn't be surprised if CBS is shopping Last.fm to some of the Spotify competitors at this point, given it's probably their best opportunity to kind of for CBS to kind of get themselves out of this space, which I think they probably you know, look back now and weren't quite sure what they were going to do with it.
Exactly. And Brian, of course, Last.fm didn't have much of a shot to compete against Pandora, you know, at least not of late, given the size of Pandora right now in the US. And so do you think this was the right play? And do you reckon it will lead, as I think as well, to some sort of divestment or sell-off of the company to somebody else that might make better use of the data they have?
The answer is maybe. For the data part of the equation, I think that could be useful as people look for solutions other than Echonest, if they're positioned to use them. As far as their value with Scrobbling and social sharing as a way of bridging across services, I'm not sure how much that's going to matter. A lot of services have already baked this into their platforms anyway. And the ones that have baked it in, like RDO, are not getting a ton of traction on it. The social feature matters where you have a large social user base, and what that means is Spotify. So if they can, I mean, right now they're bleeding money, and I'm sure CBS would want to unload them, and if they can harvest and mine the data or make use of it as a white label solution, they can get some value out of it. But otherwise, I really don't see a lot of there.
Yeah, sure. And talking about other data companies that are coming to the space after the Echonest acquisition, another company that I caught up with yesterday is The Filter, which is a UK-based company that's been around since 2006, 2007. I actually interviewed them back in 2010, I think, when I interviewed the CEO, who at the time was David Meher Roberts. Now the CEO is James Routley. I had a quick chat with him yesterday, and they've launched a new product called Responsive Radio after being out of the music space really for a couple of years and focusing more on other sides of recommendation that they were doing outside of music. This new Responsive Radio has got a seeded radio functionality, multi-seeded radio to create stations from favorites, personalized radio, and it could provide a technology to both big brands that want to have their own web radios and also a sort of be a back-end solution for more tech companies that want better recommendations on the platform. So, Jay, do you think that we're going to see more companies come into the space? And do you reckon there is a real market here? You know, because even the Echo Nest, according to the rumors, didn't sell for an insane amount of money. So the valuations there are not going to be insane, right?
I would say this. I would say there's been more strong exits for music data companies than for music providers, right? So whether you look at Gracenote or originally Last.fm or Echo Nest or any of those others, I'd say there's a much higher success rate from that perspective than actually being from a music license or music provider perspective. So I do think that more people are going to come in. I think I saw something, and maybe you saw it. I thought I saw something about the Wawa guys.
Yeah, sure. They were actually sponsoring the show for my March and South by Southwest coverage, the Sanzara guys.
Right. So right. So I think you see a lot of people see an opportunity to really get their hands in there. So I think. There will be some short-term opportunities for people to license, recommendations, data, radio services. You see a lot of brands wanting to get into sponsored radio. I think the guys like at Feed FM, you see a lot of that happening where if you've got a really easy, offering for a brand to be able to say, hey, I want to have an embedded player on my site and I right. want it to provide, radio. So, building out kind of DMCA logic in a set of APIs that allows somebody to really easily kind of seed and embed a radio station, I think you're going to see more of. I think there's opportunity. I think we will see more people kind of pop into this space.
Yeah, Brian, in the indie space, do you think that there is more opportunities there for companies to do more when it comes to recommending similar artists within that ecosystem, for example, or creating communities around the independent sector, or are they doing pretty well as it is?
Perhaps neither.
Yeah,
meaning that. It's tough with brands. I think that Feed FM is going to do well. I think that Jeff Yasuda is a proven capability of to be able to develop a back end and integrations and a gorgeous front end with Blip and now with Feed. Whether companies can create the deals with the brands is another story.
Yeah.
As far as with the independents. The real issue is one, independents and aggregators thereof are making their money from the fact that the gatekeepers have kind of collapsed and now the gatekeepers are the crowd.
Right.
So if somebody's got millions of tracks like a CD Baby or like a TuneCore and it's uncurated, it's a great thing because the cream can rise and you may never have been able to predict what the wisdom of the crowds would have helped rise to the top.
Yeah.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that people are going to want to dig within the microgenres. And we had 850 microgenres at CD Baby, whether they're really going to want to discover. And as a lot of these sort of listen services have shown, is that people often, most of the plays are from the top 100 artists by and large. And people think they want to discover, but at the end, they want to listen to what they want to listen to, and they want to listen to maybe in some cases a buzz thing of what's social and viral on the social networks or on YouTube.
Yeah.
So there's some percentage, like maybe 15% or something, that does want to discover, but how will the recommendation engines really be able to weed through such varying quality issues that you would get from long tail content?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Talking about, I wanted to go back to audio that we talked about earlier, just because I wanted to move on to talking about connected devices and connected TVs. And so one of the things that is really becoming an important story for the last couple of months is the rise of TV boxes or some sort of way of accessing the internet through your TV. Of course, Chromecast only debuted in the UK a couple of weeks ago, and I think it's selling really well at its price. £30, I believe, here, $35 in the US. Chromecast has announced the Ardio app, which is its first on-demand streaming service that is added to the Google Box. And this is good because it means that Google is not going to be restricting the Chromecast ecosystem to its own products. So that's a good sign. It means that we're probably going to see more of those apps come out. And props to Ardio for being the first one on the device, given that it's actually having a lot of traction right now. And of course, there were a bunch of stories around Amazon in the last couple of weeks. People were speculating they were going to launch a video music service that was going to be free, ad-funded. And then there's been a lot of stories around Amazon wanting to do an actual streaming service on demand, but offering too little to the labels. And there were a lot of rumors that were not substantiated by anything really concrete other than sources say that. And so on that front, do you think that the battle for the living... Amazon actually just finished a press conference, I need to add that as well, where they announced their Fire TV box. So it's a box priced at $99. They believe it's the fastest box out there. It's got a quad-core processor, 2 gigs of RAM, a bunch of features on it, and it's seen as an open-ish ecosystem because they allow companies to develop apps for the box so that they can work themselves into that. I'm not sure what the tech is behind it or how easy it is to integrate the apps, but there you go. In the screenshot I saw, the Amazon Fire box had two music-related apps, actually three. I think it had iHeartRadio, it had Pandora, and it had Vivo that I spotted, but I didn't spot any on-demand streaming services as of yet. Jay, what do you make of this new burgeoning this living room accessibility of streaming services? Do you think it's going to supersede accessibility by phones, for example, or there's going to be a relationship between the two? It does feel like the two things are very disconnected right now, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting. I listen to music kind of coming from my TV setup, but I'm old and I have floor speakers, right? Like I've got a real receiver. I don't know how common that is, you know, for a lot of folks jamming a Chromecast dongle into the back of their TV and listening to it out of the TV speaker certainly is not going to be better than listening to it out of your, you know, whatever kind of standalone speaker you have set up, you know, dock for your iPhone or whatever. So I think there's a little bit of a disconnect there. I think the battle for the living room is, you know, kind of a much bigger battle for ultimately home automation and who's going to be the center of everybody's lives.
Yeah.
I think the streaming services to those is, you know, is nice. I think obviously they skewed much more towards the lean back radio services because navigating an on-demand service with a remote is extremely painful, much easier to do it from your phone or from your laptop and beam it to whatever that device is. So,
sure.
You know, I think it's kind of a nice to have for music on there if you happen to have, you know, a real home audio setup. If not, it's, you know, it's just kind of is what it is.
Yeah, yeah. Brian, do you think this is the next wave of accessing music in the home? Or do you still think, you know, there's a lot of companies betting on mobile right now when it comes to home accessibility?
What Jay said.
Okay, cool.
I do think it's interesting that, you know, everybody's looking at Sonos's business right now, like, wow, you know, whatever, they reported almost $600 million in revenue last year, I think. And so you see a bigger trend towards people focused on the devices that compete directly with Sonos. And I think some of the other guys are like, well, we're doing video and we can throw a couple of, you know, music features in and maybe that helps us grab a little piece of that pie.
Yeah.
But yeah, the fight for the Sonos market, I think, is much more interesting when it comes to music services in the living room.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to talk a little bit about Merge, actually. And this is a story that I kind of discovered today by chance. And I'm not sure it's been covered by anybody else yet, but I wanted to quickly cover it here. It looks like, Topspin's platform, which is the Merge-related side of the company, the e-commerce-related side of the company, has been acquired or invested in by a company called the Transome Capital Group. So this company is a group that has also properties like Banmerch and Cinderblock, who have merged together pretty recently, creating the largest full-service independent merchandising company in the United States. And whilst they have there has been no announcement. I have stumbled across the Transform website, and they have Topspin Media as one of their investments, and they list the investment as being April 2014, and they talk about the platform as a merch thing. So there could well be a synergy here between this huge merchandising company, which is the Band Merch and Cineblock, and Topspin's platform, which would be pretty cool because, of course, Topspin has also been built to scale. So that would be a pretty interesting integration and creating a pretty big group of merchandise. So merchandise, of course, South By was a key part of the conversation. People were talking about it all the time at panels that were addressing how musicians still make money, especially on the road. And so this could be a big deal. So, Jay, on your front, do you feel like this could be a good home for the Topspin platform that didn't really fit into Beats Music plans?
I mean, it seems to be at kind of first pass. My knowledge of the merch business is admittedly... Too. Not that strong, but I mean, I think there is a big opportunity there, and I think it's the opportunity is made even more kind of apparent by the movements like Jay Sider was showing us with Bandpage or with the Artist Link side of Topspin's business of how do you connect fans, artists more closely directly to their fans, which is great. So you're going to get all this distribution into these various kind of streaming services and what have you, but somebody ultimately still needs to fulfill that merch.
So
making a play to try to be the default kind of merch provider that powers all those, goes up against guys like Bravado and other stuff. I think it's an interesting play and definitely something I'm going to do some more research into.
Yeah, sure. Brian, it's funny, right, that how merch is so important, yet artists are still so confused about it. Like there isn't one overarching way of doing it, and there's a lot of people that can help you with it, but it's kind of hard to navigate your way through it. At the panels that I was mentioning, there were a lot of questions from artists that were very basic as to, even just how you find the contacts to get it printed, and there's a lot of fragmentation in the marketplace. That's what I'm trying to say. So how come do you think there hasn't been much more consolidation in the space?
Well, merch is a tough nut to crack is why. I started the merch program for Discmakers, and we tried to integrate it with CD Baby, but the fact is that there's the on-demand stuff still isn't quite of the quality that on-demand, for example, CD duplication is.
Right.
The margins are small, and the shipping and fulfillment and returns are a lot harder. Like a CD or some kind of download card or something that... They're easy things to store. They're easy to pick, pack, and ship. They're easy to fill. Merch, you've got to get the right colors, and you got to get exactly the right size, which may or may not fit. And you got to order in a certain quantity to make the screen printing worthwhile.
Yeah.
And it's just it's hard for the long tail to make and fulfill a really quality product easily.
Yeah, and it's also more prone to returns as well, right?
Yes. Whereas, if you are a touring artist and you're touring the U.S. for months on end at shows, you can make them and sell them and store them and you can make money on them. I don't know if it's enough money for most artists, except for the tip of the long tail, to be something that can really save this generation of content creators. I don't think that merch in and of itself is going to do it. But I still don't think that right now as we speak, there's a tremendous solution for everybody where they can make good incremental income and deliver a quality product easily.
Yeah.
I think on-demand printing is an amazing thing. I just don't think it's necessarily something that's going to move the needle for everybody just yet.
Yeah, sure. And it's funny actually how it feels like in the US, the conversation around merch is much more important. I mean, not that it's not important in the UK, but it just feels like the number of dates that artists can play in the UK is relatively limited because, it's not a huge place. Whilst in the States, an artist can be on the road for like 3 months and never go to the same place again. And that, I guess, opens up a little bit more opportunities to shift more merch if you're seeing more people every day, right?
Yes, but that is just a sliver of artists. I mean, if you're over 40, you're not selling a lot of units, or not a trust fund baby, it's the idea of couch surfing at that age is going to wear thin. So it's a sliver of the artist, and the sliver does really well, but but there's also volume in the aggregate too.
Yeah, sure, of course. And going from talking about merch, talking about live and some problems going on at the Ultra Music Festival. I was just in Miami actually last week, and I left just before Ultra really got going, because I was there for the Miami Music Summit, which was great actually, by the way. The Ultra Music Festival had some troubles during the weekend. Unfortunately, there were 76 arrests. 118 had to be assisted by paramedics for problems of all sorts. And of course, there was one tragedy, actually two tragedies. The first one was the fact that the guard Erica Mack was trampled upon by a group of festival goers that were trying to enter the festival without the appropriate tickets, apparently, and is now in critical conditions, although it looks like she may be able to pull through. And the other one was the death of a 21-year-old who felt ill during the festival and got brought back to the car and then unfortunately died. So this has led the mayor of Miami to actually say that he doesn't want the festival to go back to the city. He's trying to find ways to essentially withdraw the permit for the festival for next year. So it's a pretty big deal for Miami, because Ultra is very much associated with the city, and it's not a great start to the EDM festival season of 2014. You know, I don't know if this is going to have any long-term effects. Of course, we've had another horrible tragedy at South by Southwest last month, which is just near where I was staying during South by. But I don't know. Do you think, Jay, that this might have some effect on EDM festivals for the rest of the year, or is it just a one-off issue given by the size of the festival?
I mean, it's a good question, and I don't really know the answer to it. I think it is interesting to kind of note that some of the bigger festivals, obviously, whether it be Bonnaroo or Coachella or something, any of those things are not in cities, and they're kind of out in the middle of nowhere to try to, contain / minimize kind of any of the overflow issues that may have. So I don't know if that's going to be a bigger trend where they're going to become more kind of destination, like, whether that's just going to kind of affect that or what. But
did your light just go out, or somebody just
apparently I'm a motion sensitive light I wasn't moving enough for. Hold on, I'll be right back, you guys.
Sure, of course. And Brian, I don't know if you have any comments on this, but it's definitely a very sad story, and I don't know whether that's going to affect festivals going forward, but it's definitely going to be strange to see Ultra out of Miami, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's every time they have a festival gathering of certain size, firstly, there's some risk of something happening.
Yeah.
Secondly, they really need to do better security, especially on the bum rushing of the show, because this happens, whether there's a tragedy or not, everywhere. It's happened multiple years at South by and other conferences. And thirdly, there are local politicos that want the thing gone or want to appear blameless.
Right.
While meanwhile, they've been reaping all the economic benefits of having this great event that brings in lots of tourists into their backyard.
Exactly.
So, and then there's the media idiots who will just go on and say, has it gotten too big? Has it jumped the shark? The answer is, EDM jumped the shark when it stopped being house music. That doesn't necessarily mean that EDM is going away. It means that it'll evolve and become something else and possibly called something else. And has South by jumped the shark? I mean, heck, back in 1997, they were saying it was too corporate. So everything is just going to go on probably as it was. They'll make some local changes. And as far as the so-called festival season, if they sell the tickets and if they go off without violence, it'll all be fine and forgotten. And if not, then there might be more industry-wide changes. But industry-wide changes are few and far between, generally.
Yeah, sure. And I wanted to close by talking a little bit about Mark Mulligan's piece. It was called Music You Bet Puts the Rise of Listen Services into Numbers, that came out this week. And so Mark was very insightful in his blog posts, and he talks about Music You Bet numbers, which were released at the first anniversary of the company, with some performance metrics that make us think about the consumption of music here in the UK. So, for example, 85% of UK radio play comes from the top 120 tracks. The forgotten fan, which is above average listening but below average spend, accounts for 30% of consumers. The Music Cube ad had users listen to 30 minutes every day to their service. 30% of all active users are subscribers. And the O2 Tracks, which is the O2's UK music service powered by Music Cube ad, has a 60% female users and an average lifetime value of £33. This is interesting because Mark calls this a listen service, so a service that sits at the opposite end, in his words, of the sophistication spectrum to access services, which are Spotify and Deezer. So in his opinion, this is part of the fourth wave of streaming, which comes after Napster, iTunes, and Spotify, and it tries to address the consumers that may not want to spend as much money as £120 or dollars per year, and they might not want access to 30 million tracks, but they might be willing to spend some money on a more curated you could even say more limited experience that costs less. So we've seen a few of these come out in the UK. We've seen Music Cube ad with O2 Tracks. We've seen Bloom FM, which is doing pretty well. They announced having 1 million registered users last month. In the US, we haven't seen that much shifting around pricing, maybe because Pandora does fill that sort of $4.99 price point. So I don't know, Brian, do you think that the scope in the US for some services trying out different formulas as far as streaming is concerned to try and lure in people that might not want to pay $10 a month?
I think they got to try everything. I don't see a lot of future in this particular model because, heck, if I can get the top 100 stuff on YouTube, why would I want to pay for the top 100 stuff? And if I can't be enticed to pay $10 a month for the entire history of Western recorded music, which I used to when I was a young tot, I was paying $18.99 for a CD if I had to, and now $10 is suddenly too much for me to listen to everything. So why would I want to pay some intermediate amount to hear a very select amount, because the select stuff I'm going to hear or see on YouTube anyway, it just doesn't seem terribly plausible to me.
Right.
But yeah, I'm not that impressed by their average lifetime value of £33. That's not a lot of money. I sure hope that people see the value in music, that music is not just background fodder to sync against video, film, or TV. I hope that people will pay for music and see the value in perhaps even curation. But this sort of, okay, you get the top tier for some intermediary price because somehow $10 for everything is too much, it just doesn't sit with me. But I'm just one guy.
Yeah, sure. Jay, what are your thoughts? Do you think we might see a few more players come into the market in the US with a different price point? I think Slacker actually is one that does offer a few different price points.
I think you'll see a lot of people try a lot of stuff. I'm with Brian. I mean, I think curation is a feature of a larger product. And the big step into music service is not from $2 to $10, it's from $0 to one penny.
Yeah.
The hard part is to get anybody in. As terms of like a fourth wave of listen services, I would argue that listen services are the second and a half wave, right? I mean, Pandora and Last of M Radio were happening before Spotify and others. So, there's definitely value in lean back experiences, and I think people have voted with their actions for a long time that they like really simple experiences. And so, whether curation, provides that really simple experience, or just a giant play button, or what have you, I think you'll see more people kind of adding those features on top of, an all-you-can-eat service. And I'm with Brian. I think $10 for a music service is a hell of a bargain. My hope is that more people are going to realize that that's a bargain. We'll see lots of interesting kind of programmatic layers on top of, those services. I think you'll see people try different price points. I think ultimately it's not really going to have that big of an impact. I think you'll see more people building interesting services on top of the all-you-can-eat backed kind of APIs of Spotify, Deezer, RDO, Beats, whomever.
Yeah, I'm sure. And actually, following up from that, there was a piece by Janko Rutgers, a GigaOM, who talked about this new company, well, this sort of rebirth of the company Raditas into Cure Media. So Raditas closed down last year and pulled the plug on the service. It was a Pandora competitor. And now Cure Media has come out of that, raising $9.6 million in a reverse merger. And they plan to launch a new service later this year, which they essentially classify as a Pandora Plus. Essentially, it gives you a lot of the Pandora-like radio features with a few on-demand-like Spotify-like services. So it will be targeted at people who use Pandora but want something more, and I would imagine it will be priced accordingly. So that's going to be a company that definitely we can look out for, although it's going to be very difficult to tackle Pandora at this point. Maybe iTunes Radio can do it, but a new startup is going to be very tough, although we've seen songs that do pretty well in the US. Finally, I wanted to ask you about any plugs that you want to do. Jay, tell us a little bit about the state of Tomahawk. And also wanted to ask you, actually while we're here, I wanted to ask you your take on the Sonos Universal Search that they rolled out. You know, that made me think of Tomahawk in a sense. So what was your take on that?
Yeah, no, I applaud the addition of Sonos to add Universal Search. It's been kind of a much needed feature for a long time. And I'm always happy when people realize that you have to start thinking outside the silo and start thinking about, I just want to play something and I don't really care where it comes from as long as it comes from one of the services that I have access to. So, that's great. The new Sonos Android app is, you know, a massive step forward for them. So I'm a big fan of what they're doing there. Myself, obviously, Tomahawk, gettomahawk.com, still available for desktop, OS X, Windows, Linux. We have a Android beta for Tomahawk that's okay. Kind of in limited distribution now. We're very excited about that, and that all connects to a new service that I'm working on with the core team from Tomahawk called Hatchet. And Hatchet, we've teased a little bit in terms of just what we want to be and what problems we want to solve, but one of the things that Hatchet does is just provides the ability to sync all of your playlists and behavior from your desktop apps to your mobile Android app. But then there's a whole lot more kind of on top of that. And so we will be opening up that beta in the coming weeks to kind of a much larger audience.
Awesome.
But yeah, it's exciting and we're really happy with where it's going. And we've gotten some interesting kind of interests from people that wouldn't necessarily have expected interest from that are reaching out to us and want to figure out maybe ways that we can do some stuff together. So totally vague again, as I always kind of am.
I totally expect a beta. I totally expect an invite to the beta.
Absolutely.
That's awesome. Cool. Well, that's again, it's tomahawk.com. Is that right?
No, it's gettomahawk.com.
Gettomahawk.com. That is, oh, I always forget that. Brian, anything to plug? And if you don't have anything to plug, anything to recommend? It can be apps, music, whatever you want.
Not at all. So, I left CD Baby a month ago and I've been helping some companies come into the U.S. and I'm in Los Angeles, excited about what lies ahead.
Okay, great. Awesome. So, it's been a fun show, definitely. And it was great to have Jay as well at the beginning. It's the first time I try and do this, but it seemed to work. So hopefully I'm going to be able to implement this in more shows. And if companies have news, breaking news, I can bring people in for 5 minutes on Skype whilst the show is recording. And hopefully nothing will break in the meantime. And so, guys, it was a real pleasure having you on. Thanks so much for coming on.
Great. Thanks for having me. Yeah.
And thanks so much for listening to Digital Music Trends. The show comes out every week. You can find it on digitalmusictrends.com. You can also search for it on the iTunes store on the podcast app, of course. And we have a YouTube channel on youtube.com/digitalmusictrends. Make sure you tune in every week. There's also a one-to-one show where I interview interesting companies, interesting projects in the music tech space. Every week, again, it comes out and it's available on all the channels that I mentioned previously. And finally, there's a new events feed that should be out next week on iTunes with all the interviews I did at South by Southwest, which were 30 interviews plus, which you can access on demand. So that's fun. But you can also find those on SoundCloud and YouTube as well. So thanks so much for listening. Have a fantastic week and until next time.